Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. She believed passionately in racial equality, like most white liberals. She worked for Ted Kennedy when she graduated from college in Boston. She was immersed in the work and ideas of Jewish intellectuals, working with Studs Terkel and studying under Saul Bellow for several years. She landed a dream job with the book publisher Doubleday, where one of her colleagues was Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. She married the noted composer, arranger, and conductor, the late James Mack. She lived on the glittering heights of Chicago society. Her name was Sheila Von Weiss Mack. The man she married, the musician, was black. An extraordinary black, to be sure, cultured and accomplished and successful, without a doubt. She bore him a mixed-race daughter. Two people of evident quality, bringing a child into the world, a child with good genes from both sides, and a child with all the advantages. So both the nature folks and the nurture folks would surely agree for once. The daughter would almost certainly be a person of quality, too. What does race matter? It is possible that Sheila Von Weiss Mack found out that race matters, but that realization came rather late in her life. The last minute, to be exact. For in that last minute of Sheila's life, her mixed-race daughter and her daughter's mixed-race boyfriend bludgeoned her to death with a large metal and glass fruit bowl, collapsing her face in on itself and asphyxiating her. They then stuffed her body into an oversized suitcase and left it in the trunk of a taxi while they decamped to a nearby hotel for some sex and partying. The little darling daughter's name is Heather Mack. She and her boyfriend, Tommy Schaefer, were eventually caught and convicted for murder. Schaefer was, as you might expect, an aspiring rapper. It's almost impossible to turn around in many cities these days without running into one of these. His street name in Chicago was Tommy X. Their murder of Sheila was cruel, disgusting, and horrifying, with a thick overlay of stupidity. It all happened in August of last year. Heather and her mother were vacationing in Bali, Indonesia, at a $1,000-a-day resort. Sheila was trying to repair her relationship with Heather, who was 19 at the time. Relationship repair was something that Sheila spent a lot of time doing with Heather, with no success whatever. Between 2004 and 2013, the police were called to the Mack's luxurious home no fewer than 86 times. In every case, sweet little Heather was the cause. Heather ran away from home. Heather locked her mother up in a small room and threatened to F her up unless she got what she wanted. She stole her mother's money and credit cards and used them to buy liquor and party at swank hotels with various mulattoes and Congoid males whose names, if she ever knew them, are not important. Heather broke her mother's arm. Again and again, Sheila refused to make a criminal complaint, refused medical treatment, and promised the officers who arrived that she and Heather would work things out. Heather ultimately assaulted Sheila so often and so severely that even ultra-liberal, ultra-tolerant Sheila filed charges. Darling daughter Heather was found guilty of battery and ordered into treatment and anger management counseling as a part of a violence prevention program, which clearly did a lot of good. Heather Mack spent part of 2012 in two different juvenile facilities. Bringing Heather on the trip to Bali was yet another effort on Sheila's part to work things out with Heather. A few days into the trip, someone using Sheila's credit card paid for a ticket for aspiring rapper Tommy so he could join them. Just hours after he arrived, Sheila was dead. After they killed Sheila, Tommy and Heather contorted her mangled, bloody body and forced it into a large metal suitcase. They used duct tape to hold her limbs in position. An odd thing to bring on a Bali resort vacation, don't you think? Sweet Heather sat on the case to help get it closed, but it wouldn't stay shut, so the pair wrapped it tightly with blood-stained sheets. No one would notice that, right? Then they took it downstairs along with their other luggage and hailed a cab. They put the suitcase containing Sheila's body into the trunk of the taxi, told the driver they had to talk to someone in the hotel and would be right back. They never showed again. And after 2 hours, the taxi man looked in his trunk and decided the bloody 3-foot-long case deserved the attention of the police. Meanwhile, Tommy and darling Heather hailed another cab on the other side of the hotel, and one went to the airport and tried unsuccessfully to leave the country without their passports. Two tried to get Sheila's valuables and their own passports from the hotel safe deposit box and were refused. And three checked into another hotel 5 miles away, celebrating Heather's imminent possession of her family's trust fund by partying, having sex, and passing out. When they were awakened by police a few hours later, they claimed that mysterious vanishing bandits had kidnapped them, killed Sheila, and for some unknown reason bought them a room at a 4-star hotel before disappearing without a trace. They told a very different story at trial. They admitted that Tommy Schaefer had bludgeoned Sheila to death and that Heather had been his accomplice. They cried on the stand and showed remorse. It was all done in the heat of the moment, they said. Sheila had called Tommy a quote-unquote nigger, they said, and had then tried to choke him. Tommy grabbed the fruit dish and swung it to defend himself, never intending to kill at first. Heather, she claimed, was in shock and didn't know what she was doing as she robotically, her word, smashed her mother's body, forced it into the suitcase, pulled the stupid taxi scene, and then, still robotically, one assumes, tried to leave the country, called her lawyer, and partied past dawn. They were convicted, but in view of their remorse and the fearsome N-word provocation they had to endure, the court showed great leniency. They could have been sentenced to die by firing squad. This is Indonesia, remember? Instead, Tommy got 18 years and Heather was sentenced to 10. And she did gain access to that trust fund, too. Cue Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. But just this week, a new development cast some doubt on Tommy's and Heather's story of a racially tinged argument that ended in tragedy. Investigators got access to the Facebook and text messages passed between the pair and Tommy's cousin, Robert Bibbs. Laced with LOLs and brightly colored emojis, and interspersed with references to Heather soon becoming a millionaire and sharing the wealth with her co-conspirators, the trio openly discussed their plans to kill Sheila weeks before it happened and various methods they might use to do it. Darling Heather even sent a Facebook message saying, "Don't tell anyone I asked you to kill my mother." After Tommy arrived in Bali, he sent a text to Bibbs saying that they had tried to kill Sheila with a drug overdose, as Bibbs had advised, but it hadn't worked. Schaefer's text reads as follows. "Wasn't enough, bro." He sent an emoji of a gun and wrote, "Definitely need that." At one point, Heather urged Tommy to kill her mother while she was sleeping. Schaefer texted Bibbs saying, "She wants me to right now, while she's snoozing." "Go in," Bibbs wrote back. "Go sit on her face with a pillow then." What kind of child kills its own mother? What kind of idiots plan a murder over text messages and Facebook and then abandon all their plans and kill their victim Stone Age style instead? What kind of being is it who mumbles, "I'm just like Britney Spears," when photographers shoot her picture just after her indictment for murder? What kind of creature was brought into the world when exemplary black musician Mac conceived a daughter with smart but dizzy white liberal Von Weiss? This is a case of regression to the mean with a vengeance. What is regression to the mean? It is a mathematical concept with profound biological implications. If two people of near genius, say 160 IQ, conceive a child, that child will probably have a higher IQ than the average of 100, but it will also likely be less than 160. The child's IQ, even with such superior parents, will on average fall back somewhat toward the average of the race from which both parents and children sprang. This is true of other genetically determined characteristics as well. Height, for example. Regression to the mean explains why racial mixing between blacks and whites, even when the partner who is a member of the lower race is of exceptionally high quality, like James Mack likely was, still produces beings with many of the worst qualities of the Congoid, like Heather Mack. Even if the father is the world's only black expert on Provençal poetry, the children he sires with a white woman revert to somewhere between the white and black mean, just like children sired by a gangbanger would. His exceptional superiority to other blacks avails you next to nothing. Regression to the mean explains why such mixing always destroys the qualities of the higher race, qualities that were acquired over tens of thousands of years of natural selection. The intelligent black manager will produce children more often than not who will end up closer to being aspiring rappers and Heather Mack clones than to members of their father's supposedly exalted station. And a half-black child, whose features and mentality are almost always closer to its black side than its white, will instinctively want to congregate and socialize and choose a mate from others of its kind. So we are not at all surprised that no matter what upper-crust Sheila did, Heather always, quote-unquote, ran with a bad crowd. Will this kind of result, a Heather Mack kind of result, always happen? No, of course not. But where racial mixing is tolerated, as in the United States today, and where racial mixing is encouraged, as it is in the Jewish-dominated media today, this kind of result will become a lot more common. And the general decline in morals and intelligence will have innumerable other consequences too, none of them good. Now, I could give you reasons like this why racial mixing is wrong all day long, practical reasons, ethical reasons, scientific reasons, aesthetic reasons, and they'd all be true. But the reasons we must oppose racial mixing go far deeper than just preventing murders, or making for happier, more successful children, or better marriages, or time-honored tradition, or even maintaining our standards of civilization. These deeper reasons are moral reasons, spiritual reasons. We, as a race, are still evolving. And that means that we are becoming more and more different from the other races of this planet. We are becoming something new. Apollo 11 was just the start, the first faltering step on an immense journey whose destination we cannot even guess. The greatest writers and poets of all our greatest ages are just a hint of what is to come. The scientific knowledge of today is just a bare beginning. It is like the first two parallel lines ever drawn, scratched in the sand on the floor of a cave in Europe 50,000 years ago, compared to what will be if our race survives. We must, if we intend to continue existing, acknowledge that the African race is, on average, far more primitive than our own. Primitive in appearance, that is obvious, and primitive in its mentality. Less able to solve problems, less able to control its own impulses, less able to defer gratification and plan for the future, and less able, probably unable, to maintain, much less advance, either civilization or its own evolutionary grade. Mixing with such a race is suicide for us. Mixing with such a race will destroy who we are and what we are becoming. Destroying our sacred gene patterns through racial mixing is the ultimate sin. And Sheila Von Weiss-Mack paid the wages of that sin with her life. We need your support. Please write or donate online today. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance, founded by William Luther Pierce in 1970. This program is published every week at whitebiocentrism.com and nationalvanguard.org. You can join and support us by visiting natall.com. That's NATALL.com. Or write to National Alliance, Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. We welcome your support, your inquiries, and your help in spreading our message of hope to our people. Once again, that address is Box 172, Laurel Bloomery, Tennessee, 37680, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strong, reminding you to keep on thinking free.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth.